Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten. With me today from the Minnesota Star Tribune and author of Ant, The Incredible Journey of NBA Rising Star Anthony Edwards, Chris Hine. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time. I know you're very busy making the media round, so I appreciate that I am one of your stops on your tour. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what has it been like with the book coming out? Finally, the Wolf season end, you finally get, after spending all those months in Atlanta last offseason, what's it been like kind of getting some time to focus on yourself and the book?
Yeah, it's been surreal. It's been really cool to see the reaction from people on social media, people reading the book, finishing it very quickly. Like, it's been very heartwarming and awesome to see, you know, being able to have this book finally out in the world for people to consume and seeing people respond to different parts of it. It's been really rewarding and gratifying and it's been just awesome. And I'm very grateful to Wolves fans everywhere in Minneapolis, in St. Paul, in Minnesota, in the country and around the world that have been asking about this book and wanting to buy it. It's been awesome to see.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like a level of doubt that comes in. Even like when you or I are like thinking about myself, if I write an article, there's always like, even if it's only taking me a couple hours to do it, there's a level of doubt halfway through that's like, who's gonna read this thing? I'm sure on a gigantic scale, it's like that when you're in the halfway through the book or whatever. So I got to imagine that it's a great feeling to get it done and then have it. Yeah.
100%. It's been crazy. Like it's just been awesome to see like people just tweeting the pictures at me and it feels like when you're doing it. And then even there was like a couple month period where the book was done and I couldn't really make any adjustments to it. It was like, all right, well, we're just kind of waiting for it to come out now. I never really thought like the day would actually come that like the book would actually be out and in stores and available to buy on Amazon, wherever. I almost thought like for a while I was just doing this for my own enjoyment. But now we've got people with books in their hands and reading it by the pool, by the beach, on planes, mm-hmm. wherever. And yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like, obviously this was never like a realistic thing, but it's like you hear this story, HBO cutting projects that are already done to that right. are just to save money. It's like, oh God, no. But yeah, I guess we can just hop right into it. I was one of those people that finished the book. I mentioned that to you before we started. Mm-hmm. Hadn't read a book like this in like 10 years or so. So I guess really wanted to get through it because it's covering the team. Ant's a big part of that. So yeah, I wrote down some questions for you and we'll just kind of go through them here.
Sure.
The start of the book, obviously the big thing is his family, and so much of what I took away from it was like so much of who Ant is now was formed when he was young. And I guess that's true for all of us, right? But like to him, especially like what we get out of him either on the court basketball wise or in media availabilities or whatever, so much of that is like from his formative years. Like you wrote in there, like him supporting his teammates like he does, whether it's Kat or Jaden or whoever, comes from like his mom being a cheerleader for those teams. And then you mentioned his grandpa being cool under pressure and not letting things like get to him. Like Ant has some of that. And then obviously the big thing is like Ant letting people coach him hard, and Finch being able to do that comes from his football years. Am I right in that assessment from what you gathered?
100%. You nailed pretty much all those points exactly. And that was kind of what I was trying to portray with some of the qualities that you see in Ant now, the ultimate positive teammate coming from his mother and always being like that, his football coaches being super tough on him, which I think has allowed other coaches and Finch to be able to coach him in a tough and hold him accountable kind of way. And I think on some level too, like Ant realizes that, like that he needs people to hold him accountable, that, you know, in some ways, you know, when you're left to your own devices, you know, sometimes you may not push yourself as hard or, you know, you just need a little bit of direction. And I think that's also been a constant in Ant's life, is as long as he has people there that are pushing him, that have his best interests at heart and are doing it and are pushing him or are being a little hard on him, but with the ultimate goal being to make him better and to get better, he responds to that. And that's another constant that I think you notice in his life, is he does a good job of sort of knowing who is good for him and who has his best interests at heart and who maybe doesn't. And that's how he's navigated life. And I think that goes to a lot of the people that are in his circle to this day, and why, you know, somebody like Finch has been so successful in coaching him over the years.
Yeah. And it's, I found it interesting that he was able to like keep good people in his life, or maybe more impressively, like keep bad people out of his life, especially obviously the early on the book and the early big moment of his life is when he loses both of his mother and his grandmother. And I think, I mean, obviously we all knew that that was part of Anthony Edwards' life, but reading it in book form and reading it reported out like you did, it really, like, the grief that must have come from that. And obviously you mentioned like he was just stonewalled a lot of the times about it, but you know, deep down, even if there is a level of like holding it down, and that almost has to come, but there's a level of grief that comes with it. And in passing, you kind of mentioned like this question of, does he make the NBA or does he become what he becomes if not for those seminal moments? And there's no real way to know, and it's probably not even worth like really
going down that,
answering that question.
Sure. Yeah.
Cause you ultimately, you know, it would have affected anyone, everyone, but I guess how much do you think it still affects him today? Is there a level of like getting past it that is even possible? I guess, how does it today, losing both of those people so quickly, how does it affect him, do you think?
Yeah, never really had a chance to ask him, because I didn't get to really talk to him for the book or anything like that. And we don't really talk to him about that in the course of our day-to-day jobs either. So it's tough to tell. Obviously, you know, I haven't been in that position, so I can't relate. I can't say one way or the other. But, you know, it definitely seems like it's a constant motivator. You know, and it was since the time he was about 14 years old, you know, just that work ethic came around that maybe was missing before, and just the drive to make it for them and make it for his family as a whole. And you know, that and then once he got in the gym and was constantly in the gym working hard, working out with Justin Holland, who's, you know, he's still very much a big part of Ant's life today. The work just fed on itself. He saw himself getting better and better and better, and he started rising up the recruiting rankings and all that. And, you know, tough to say what maybe really deep down motivates him now. He's always been a competitive guy, and winning and all that. I think, you know, he's competitive in everything he does, whether it's shooting pool or playing cards or what. He's just that kind of guy, right? Video games, as we all know. So, you know, I'm not sure what maybe drives him or motivates him now, but I feel like at the time, yeah, that definitely played a huge part in his life trajectory for sure.
Yeah. And that's what's impressive about like his early years is just, like you said, that drive where, obviously, I don't know, effort's always a weird word for on the court stuff, but like you see like the different levels of intensity that Ant can play with. But early on in those years, I think like the reclassifying stuff was impressive to me, that he was able to Holy Spirit prep held them back a year, and then basically had to complete two school grades in the span of 12 months for someone that
kind of that's exactly right. Yeah.
And I think he wasn't a bad student, or maybe he was, but it wasn't like the quote unquote talent was there, or he's a smart person, but like the little things are like that. It was funny. I don't know why I made this connection in my head, but him and the school demerits and like the tucking in the shirt, I made the Chris Paul connection with that the jersey untucked game. I don't know why, but I guess I just was impressed with like him being able to get to Georgia at 19 or 18, really, after like the swap between Terrell and Holy Spirit Prep.
Yeah, he wasn't. He's a very smart person. It's like, I think Rachel Little, who the registrar at Holy Spirit, who kind of guided Ant and really helped make that chapter of the book, she puts it very well. It's like, listen, Ant had basketball all the time, so school just naturally fell by the wayside. So Ant would do what he had to do, like, to get by, essentially. Like, you know, how much did he have to study for a certain test? What kind of grade did he have to get on a certain test or exam or whatever? And he kind of knew that but at the end of the day, basketball was always going to be the priority because that is your future. When you're that high of a prospect, literally basketball is your future. But you do have to make sure you're passing your classes. And at Holy Spirit, it was tough. You know, it was really tough to pass those courses. The teachers were not forgiving. They didn't care that he was the number one basketball prospect in the country. So it was having the intelligence to know, like, okay, I have to spend my mental energy here and here, and I can devote this much time to this much time to that. Because at the end of the day, he did have to be in the gym working, and he had practices and games and separate workouts and early morning workouts and late night workouts and transportation to and from places. And just, it's a lot going on for those 2 years that he was at Holy Spirit. So, you know, just having the ability to compartmentalize and divide your time and mental energy accordingly is also a skill in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I just think back, I'm sure you can feel the same way. Like, me thinking back, me 16, 17, 18, when I know I valued my free time, still do to a certain extent, but like, to like enjoying basketball that much and putting in that much work, that alone makes sense. But like, to be able to do enough school-wise or do enough family-wise to be able to keep up with it is impressive. Another like personality interesting thing about Ant is, you mentioned a lot of people describe Ant as like an old soul.
Yes.
And I think watching him, like, at least for myself or as a fan, like, you don't necessarily see that on the court necessarily as much as you would like meeting him personally. But then also, like, what's very clear is he's still young at heart too. And it's like, he's this interesting combination of old soul, but young at heart, which is kind of similar to him. Like, his on the game, his on court game is similar to that, where he's young. I mean, he's about as good as a 23-year-old basketball player can be, while also having the deficiencies in his game are also like very classic young player deficiencies.
Right.
And we've seen less and less of that at 23 than at 20. Which of those two parts do you think kind of wins out more, his old soulness or like the young at heart portion of him?
That's a very good question. And I would describe him that way. I think with the old soul, it comes, I think there's just a natural innate ability to like read a given situation, read a room. But I do think there's just a genuineness and a purity to like how he interacts with people, with his teammates, like the positive energy that he radiates with people, he's always funny, he's always joking around, he's just very uplifting, encouraging. So I don't know if I would term that in the old soul or the young at heart category. maybe more the old soul, just in how you know that your energy can affect people, and you know that that can have a big impact on those around you. So I'll probably say that probably wins out in the end. Just because I think you have to have an emotional awareness and intelligence that is a mature quality more so than a young at heart kind of quality, where maybe you don't realize it. But I think he does realize like what his energy can do for a team, for a locker room, for an organization. So I would probably say the old soul wins out at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's maybe the teammate that brings that out most of him is Mike.
Yes.
The old Mike's obviously it's an old soul, but in NBA terms is literally close to the oldest player mm-hmm. in the league. So it is just kind of being in the locker room more and more myself. Like you see Ant is close to pretty much everyone in that locker room, which I don't think is the case when you have a 19-year-old teammate in Rob and how old is Mike? 30-plus-year-old teammate in Mike Conley, or same with Joe Ingles too. I don't think every single, especially like a superstar player, I'm sure is not close with every single player on the roster.
Yeah, that's very true, and I think that's intentional. I think in some ways too, it's making people feel included. Kyle Anderson made that point in the book that Ant goes out of his way to make everybody on the team feel included, whether you're a two-way guy, whether you're or whether you're making a max contract. Like, everybody is part of the team. Everybody is on the same level with him, and there is no hierarchy. There's no favorites, whatever you want to term it. It's, these are my teammates. These are my guys. These are who I'm going to battle with, and I love all of them. Like, that's how he approaches life. And, you know, the only thing is if you don't, some people, I don't know if anybody takes it for granted or whatnot, but just don't get on his bad side. Don't take advantage of how positive and uplifting he can be. And you're going to be fine with Ant. And that's one of the qualities that he has that, like you said, not every NBA star, especially at this age, has that ability to just connect with people from all ages, all contract statuses, all walks of life, staff members, coaches, media, whoever. You know, he's able to just find a connection with people, and it's part of his, it's part of why I think he's a natural leader. And, you know, I think leadership can come in many shapes and sizes, and it's not just one kind of definition where, you know, it's a rah-rah, I'm going to get up in front of the locker room and deliver a motivating speech kind of leadership. Like, leadership, being inclusive like that and making people feel welcome and infusing people with positive energy, that is leadership to me. Like, that's a big part of leadership. And he's always had that characteristic, even if he hasn't always been like the quote unquote vocal leader of a team or the one that's, you know, trying to hold the team accountable in a huddle or in a halftime or what have you. I think we're starting to see that. We've heard stories of that throughout the year, that has been coming around in a big way, that sort of leadership. But Ant has always had that other kind of leadership that just affects people's day to day and makes them want to come to the facility and be a part of this team. Like, that's leadership too.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Yeah, and you mentioned it being intentional, but it is that, but it's also natural. That's what's, it's interesting that it is, there's obviously intention to it, but it just, that type of stuff comes naturally. I mean, you mentioned so many times in the book, Ant doesn't like being fake or being like, he wants like, be real with me, be straight up with me. And that's what he's able to do, that while also including everyone, which is, like you said, just so impressive as a young leader. And I'm guessing the vocal leadership will and already has kind of come through, especially like, think back to this last season with that, when they start 8-10, I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of vocal leadership from Ant in that portion of the season. And I think that continues to grow. But yeah, it's going back to his upbringing a little bit. One thing I really found interesting was his mom was like almost, I don't know if encouraging, but certainly was okay with the video games to a certain extent, because it kept him in the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, like, for me, and I'm guessing for many other people, it was the opposite. My mom wanted me to put the video games away and go outside more often.
Yeah.
It's not that I've got plenty of video game time, but like, would have liked the opposite. In that juxtaposition, I think, was in Ant's life a lot. Like you mentioned, the Hinton household, which, like, I was struck by, like, they got the pool, they got the, they're in a nicer neighborhood. Like, I think being around that portion and then, like, Terrell versus Holy Spirit were two very different high school experiences. I know my high school experience was very similar to Holy Spirit prep. I went to a private Catholic high school with the uniforms, and you mentioned a cookie break. My high school was, at least inside the walls, was known for the cookies. We're very good there. So I'm certainly more experienced with the Holy Spirit prep side, but I think all throughout Ant's lifestyle, and especially as he gets older and the NBA career kind of becomes more obvious that it's going to at least get a shot at, but the juxtaposition between his upbringing and kind of the more opportunities he got, was interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, he's lived a lot of, he lived in a lot of different areas, so to speak, you know, in that way, in his upbringing, and, you know, his life was kind of broken up in that way, where it's like football season, you're with, you know, you're largely at home, and you're around your football team, and he's kind of around his neighborhood a lot. And obviously he's going to school, you know, that's the fall and winter months. So, you know, that's school. So you're going to school every day as well. And then summer, you know, summer, springs and summers, more basketball focused, you know, AAU tournaments, traveling tournaments. So he was spending more time with, you know, the Watkins family, or as you mentioned, the Hinton family, kind of in the northern suburbs of of Atlanta. And you know, he would spend a significant amount of time there, you know, stay over their places a lot, and then travel with them to the games. His family would then come to the games, you know, out of state, didn't matter. They would show up, they would make it work. And, you know, that was kind of what his life was. It was like kind of that toggle back and forth of football, basketball, and, you know, the different sets of teammates and families that were in his life at those points in time. But with Dana Watkins, being kind of one of the constants, in both areas. And that's why Dana plays such a big role in the first three chapters when you read it, because he was there for basically all of Ant's life from the time he was about 6 years old till, you know, his high school years. And so nobody knows that Anthony Edwards at, from that point in time, aside from his own family, better than Dana does, and just what Ant went through and what he was like as a kid, and what those summers were like at his house and at the Hinton household as well. And just what that did for Ant, and, you know, what it showed him.
Yeah. And again, like we talked about this earlier, it's just impressive, like the network of people that was willing and able to help Ant through those years, get him to all those, the car rides, the, and I think we all, if I'm assuming you played youth sports, like we all experienced that. And that was, that's like half the fun of it is, like, I know I wasn't very good at any of the sports necessarily that I played, but like the car rides, the being shuffled back and forth, sleepovers here, going to that, like, that's half the fun. And it's, I mean, just like the support network was really interesting. And even before, like when he's a teenager, and the, certainly the NBA career wasn't, you mentioned that like the NFL was kind of early on in his life was the, was potentially the place where people thought he could go. And then by 14, the injuries take him out of that, which I think is something we recognize, that the, like the him getting hurt and then coming back 2 seconds later, that seems like it, even the football, it happened during football season until he unfortunately hit the injury that, that wasn't, that he wasn't that able
was,
to really.
He broke his ankle when he was 13, which was, and then he played a little bit in high school after that, but then I think he said I think I interviewed him 3 years ago. I think he said he hurt his knee in high school, and he's like, that's it. Like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to get hurt like this anymore. So that was when he really focused in on basketball full time.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it makes sense. As someone who didn't really play football, I wouldn't, wasn't my cup of tea, but yeah, moving on to his college years, I guess knowing Ant, it's not surprising he stayed home for college at Georgia. And it did seem like, Georgia was trying to build something with that. They got a bunch of like NBA quality prospects at that time, and who knows what, how they were able to get, you never know with that, especially that era of college basketball. I know, like, ask Nas what he was, got to go to LSU. He got six figures allegedly to go to LSU. But I guess, was there anything you found, like, what was his reasoning for staying at Georgia? Was it simply just staying home? I did look up like who that Kentucky team was. It seemed like that. I looked at whatever recruiting platform. It said Kansas also offered him and Florida State, but
right.
You made it seem like it was Kentucky. So they had, and who knows if they get
to hear, to hear Nick tell that it was Kentucky or Georgia. That was, yeah, that, you know, it was, those were the two. He wasn't really seriously considering anybody else. It was either Kentucky or Georgia. But yeah, I think to your point, yeah, it was the home factor, you know, yeah. It did help him. It did help that they were about an hour away from Georgia. His sister had just had a kid, like Antoinette had just had her son, his nephew. And so, you know, I think he wanted to be around for that a little bit as well. I think that played into the decision to stay home. So just to be there one more year, essentially, for the family. And Tom Crean kind of said as much. It's like, we sold that. It's like, your life is going to change after your 1 year of college. You're probably going to be living away from home. You're not going to be in Atlanta, most likely. So you're going to have to move, this and that. But you don't have to move right now. You can have one more year where you're around your family, you're around your friends, and you're able to just have this year of development, of playing in college, but you have one more year before you really have to make the clean break. And, you know, that's what Georgia sold him on.
Yeah. It makes sense, just knowing, reading the book, obviously, and knowing Ant, that he'd want to stay home. I mean, it's only what, six years after the loss of his family? Like,
yep. Yeah. Yeah.
You'd imagine, like, that is a big thing. I did look up, so Kentucky, their team that year was Emmanuel Quickley, Nick Richards, and Tyrese Maxey are the NBA guys that eventually came over. Who knows if they get Ant, if one of those guards is on the team, but imagine that's a pretty good team there. I did some other, like, I did some research on, like, his college career, that the Maui tournament that you talked about. First thing I noticed on those calls was Bill Walton on the call. So that, yeah, the late great, yeah, Bill Walton always called those Maui tournaments. That was great. And then the game before, you didn't talk much about the Dayton game, but that's an Obi Toppin. That was a really good Dayton team. It's too bad that the COVID kind of struck out that NCAA tournament, because that Obi Toppin Dayton team, and Will Sands are plenty familiar with Obi Toppin and his
that's right, his heroics. Yes.
Yeah. So it was, yeah, that Maui tournament was big. And you mentioned, I think you touch on it, but like them being down to Chaminade is a big deal. Like, that's a D2 school that's only playing there because they're the host. And
right.
It would have been nice, like, obviously, like, Ben Simmons doesn't make the tournament with LSU a few years prior, but it would have been cool to have some Anthony Edwards March Madness highlights, and that team just never really got it together.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah, that Chaminade moment was a big moment because he checked one of his teammates after the game, as you can read in the book there. Yeah, it was a weird, not a weird year, but, you know, it's just a tough year for Georgia basketball. And, you know, for Ant, you know, it was a lot of growing pains, and a lot of growing pains that continued into his career, especially when it came to late game decision making and things like that. And, you know, they had some leads in some games that year that they couldn't hang on to. And, you know, it was a young team overall, and you're just going to go through those struggles. But at the end of the day, COVID wiped everything out in the postseason anyway. So, you know, it was just a weird time for sure.
Yeah, I know, like, just thinking about my school, Iowa State had Halliburton at the time. And so, and you'd say, well, I don't think they went to Halliburton got hurt in like the non-conference, and I think that's the year they didn't even win a conference game. And Iowa State was one of the few schools, they lost their Big 12 tournament game the day before everything went to crap. So it's like, Iowa State was like one of the few schools that got their season finished with. And as we see, Halliburton is still playing basketball when the Wolves would still like to be. Yeah, we can talk about that 2020 draft process. I think one thing you hit home is just how much COVID screwed up just everything in terms of talent evaluation, draft prep from Ant's side. But the Wolves do their due diligence, obviously, and very much it's interesting to see Glenn wrote a blank check to make sure the Wolves made sure they got their guy. And obviously they did, and that was like the biggest thing where I don't know if every team would have picked Ant number one or like they mentally got there, but like the Wolves were very at the by the end of the draft process had very clearly narrowed in on their guy, where I think the reputation was like LaMelo was the talent wise was like the fit. And I know I remember like people got on the Wolves, oh, you guys are not smart for prioritizing D'Lo and Cat over like Wiseman or LaMelo. But I guess how do you see the draft process going differently if there is no COVID? Does Ant end up the number one pick? And maybe how many teams actually would have picked Ant number one if they like even had the opportunity?
Maybe he would have been a little more in demand because maybe that, you know, the Golden State workout where he, you know, famously flopped, maybe that workout doesn't happen or happen as badly if it's, you know, non-COVID times, because the COVID letdown and the, you know, the kind of lack of preparation and difficulties around that was what led to the Golden State workout. So maybe he impresses Golden State a little more in that workout, and maybe there's, I don't know, maybe there's more of a demand at the top of the draft for whether it's people trying to move up or how just how they view him. Potentially, I'm not 100% certain how it all shakes out, but I think it's reasonable to say that maybe some of the things that stuck to Ant early in his career, like the lack of not caring about basketball, not working hard, whatever. I don't think those become as strong, just because I think if you had an Anthony Edwards who was in the gym all the time, able to work out all the time, you know, with different people, whatnot, and COVID didn't place any restrictions on that, I think he probably would have navigated the draft process a lot differently and probably a lot better and come out of it on the other end. So at the end of the day, I think the biggest takeaway and legacy is that this was not an easy decision for the Wolves to make at the time with Gerson Rosas in the front office. And, you know, COVID was obscuring what may have otherwise been, you know, some of your opinions about Anthony Edwards. We now know that, like, he cares a lot about basketball. He has a very high work ethic. That was not evident during the 2020 draft process. Maybe it would have been under normal circumstances, but the Wolves and Gerson Rosas were kind of able to see through it and pick him anyway. And it was the right pick. You know, and but that just added kind of another layer of noise that you had to break through to make the right decision. And they did.
Yeah. It was nice going down the memory lane with Gerson and Ryan Saunders, mm-hmm. just because, like, I mean, obviously that it ended abruptly, with that regime, especially mm-hmm. Gerson. But, yeah, I mean, the Wolves aren't where they are without like the quality selections those guys made. I mean, Nas, Jaden, and Ant, like pretty much the core of the team right now, were all Gerson people originally. And obviously the current administration has renewed all three of those guys. So it's not just them, but, I guess, why do you think that football story stuck so much? I don't like,
right. Yeah. That ESPN story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, yeah. Where Ant said, like, I like basketball, but it's what I, right. it's only what I do, whatever that quote exactly was. I don't know. You know, it's a good question. I don't know why that stuck, where that one quote stuck so much. I guess maybe because there were these pre-draft whispers that he didn't work hard. So this was just maybe confirmation from himself that maybe some of that was true. Maybe that was part of it. And it wasn't just during the days leading up to the draft, but that seemed to stick with him a lot in the first year or two. And he had to really dispel that. So, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes quotes take off and you don't know why, or why a guy says a certain thing and it ticks people off. I don't know why that one quote really made so much noise. Obviously, it being an ESPN story, you know, added to the focus that was put on it. But yeah, I'm not sure. You never in this day and age of the internet, I don't know why things do and don't go viral. So
yeah.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Is there anything you did a good job like explaining why that quote happened, in the sense of that was at the end of, they had delayed the draft twice at that point.
Yeah.
And I think we see this, like, he was just tired of it. He was tired of the questions, and he, I don't know if he lied is obviously the wrong word, but he exaggerated. I mean, everyone does, but like, he is known to exaggerate some things at times. And I just think, like, obviously he enjoys football, but I also don't think, like, if you went up to him now and started asking him, if you go up to Mike and ask him about fantasy football, you'll get him to talk his ear off. I don't think if you went up to Ant and started talking about like whatever NFL game was on the TV, I'm not sure he would I don't think he's watching football like he is. But if you went and asked him about Kevin Durant or a basketball,
I think Ant is a big football fan. I do.
Okay.
I do think so, especially when it comes to college. Like when Notre Dame and Georgia were facing each other, and I went to Notre Dame and he went to Georgia, we talked a little bit, and he knew like some of Georgia's personnel and things like that. Like, he pays attention to football. He still does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm certainly willing to be wrong there. You would know better than me, but, it's just such a weird, like, I think what you said, what goes viral and what doesn't.
Right. That's it. Yeah.
We'll talk about the cat Jimmy of it all. I think that kind of falls into that a little bit. One thing, I did a little sleuthing. So you mentioned Rosas mentioned in his Houston days that they interviewed a player shirtless. It didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
And that player was a disaster. So I looked back and looked at all of Houston's draft picks. They were fairly good, and they didn't have a lot of high picks that you would consider a disaster. And maybe it was a second round pick that he's talking about. But the person that fits just the basic description that Rosas gave in the book is Royce White. Do you know, could that be the person he's talking about?
I did not ask Gerson who it was, and he didn't say it on the record, obviously, but I didn't ask him even who it was. I didn't even think like it was that important of a detail. It's just the...
Oh, it's not. I just hooked on it.
Mindset. I can't speculate as to who it may or may not have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in my head, it's Royce White, and that's just...
That's
not
fair.
Factual.
You could have that. I honestly do not know. I don't even know off the record who it was.
Yeah. I looked into it. They didn't have all of their top 10 picks in that era worked out. I mean, I would say if he called any of the players they took while he was in Houston as disasters, I would disagree. Like, they all had at the very least quality NBA careers. The only one that didn't was Royce White, which I think he was pick 16, but yeah,
like I said, it could have been a second round pick or somebody that they interviewed and thought, well, we'll look past the shirtless thing. Maybe he'll be okay. And then maybe it wasn't. Yeah.
Just in my head, it makes the most sense as Royce White. So that's as an Iowa State person, a Minnesota resident, like the Royce White connection is funny there. But obviously another impact that COVID had on Ant was the quick turnaround between the draft and the start of the season. And I think you saw that in a slow start to his season, and it ended up costing him Rookie of the Year because part of it is, and rightly or wrongly, I think a lot of these awards are determined by wins. Charlotte was decent that year, and the Wolves were not. But I do think that if there's a good chance that if they have like a full training camp, full off season, that Ant's slow start is mitigated a little bit, and he does end up winning Rookie of the Year over LaMelo. I don't know how much I'm sure at the moment, like, Ant and his team was frustrated that he didn't win with like better counting numbers. But do you think, like, I guess in your opinion, should he have won? And like, do they even care anymore that he didn't?
I don't think it really matters. I mean, it's so long ago at this point, and it's your first year. Like, ultimately, yeah, you lose that battle, but do you win the war in the end? You
definitely know, and done that.
Right. And so I think when you can tout now that you've been a 2-time All-NBA player, you're a 3-time All-Star, like, you have all these other accolades now. You know, in the moment, sure, it was disappointing, wanted to win, all that stuff, but we're 5 years out now, and Ant just got named to a second All-NBA team. I mean, that's, you know, that's proof right there of he's winning that war, so to speak, against LaMelo. You know, it's funny because nobody's talking about that anymore. Like, who's better, Ant or LaMelo? Like, you know, you don't hear that anymore. Ant made that an irrelevant point of discussion in NBA discourse very quickly.
Very true. I did go look up the starting lineup for his first game, which I was in attendance for, which I always take as a point of pride. Not many people were there. No fans. For his
first game, right?
I think you guys were in like the suite level, and for whatever reason, I wasn't covering the team media or I wasn't a writer back then. I was doing stats. And I was sitting kind of at the top of the 100 level. So I didn't get the fancy suite you guys got, but
I wouldn't say we had fancy. No, we weren't in the suite yet. We were actually at, I think maybe like you, like at the top of the lower bowl.
There you go. But the starting lineup, and I'll ask you a question: Rubio, Malik Beasley, Jake Layman, which is, that's interesting. I do remember there's a point, I don't remember, this season, the previous season, we're like, just wait, we'll get Jake Layman back and we'll start winning some ball games. I do remember that. Josh Okogie, and then Kat. And then I don't remember why D'Lo was coming off the bench. I think that was like a one game thing. And then Juancho Hernangómez.
I do remember D'Lo was late for something that day. If you just hit a memory that just came up in my mind. I think D'Lo was late to shoot around that morning. And so as punishment, Ryan made him come off the bench that game. I think that was like a storyline.
I remember it
was a one game punishment kind of thing for D'Lo.
I remember there was a reason, but I couldn't remember what that reason was. I'm guessing that's right. But Juancho Hernangómez, his aunt's movie co-star from the Sandler movie. And then Nas, Jarrett Culver, who was, their pick the year before?
Yeah, he was in his second year.
And obviously, I think he was on Orlando's G League team this year. I think I saw him out there. And then obviously Ant off the bench. And then his first basket was a three assisted by Josh Okogie, and his first assist was a Cat three. So fun to hear. One story from this year, I think, that kind of relates to the book is, I don't remember what the interaction was, but he was talking to one of like Dillingham, Clark, Minot, Shannon, one of those guys. And he was saying like, well, yeah, I came off the bench my rookie year. It's just like, I just remember us, I think it was probably in the media room after, we were like, yeah, but Ant, you were playing 25, 30 minutes still. These guys are getting 12 minutes and don't play every night. It was interesting to see how much he disliked coming off the bench.
I mean, he put on a good face of it, and he didn't, you know, publicly complain, but that's the, you know, the competitor. And you know, listen, a lot of NBA players are like this, like, you know, especially early in their careers, like, you know, they think they should be starting. They think they should be getting 35 minutes a night. They think, you know, and he was no different. But what was different, I think, was that he didn't let it boil over. He didn't let it affect his relationship with his teammates or with Ryan, or he would just, you know, maybe quietly seethe. But that's also kind of, again, it's life in the NBA. When guys don't feel like they're getting the minutes or the playing time that they do, they have to deal with it in a certain way. And I think also people just expect that in the NBA, especially out of rookies. And that was, you know, that's part of the coaching staff's job and the front office's job to explain XYZ. It's like, well, here's why you're not starting just yet. And it's because of this. Now, again, who knows with a full training camp and stuff like that. But, you know, as you see, and as we knew at the time too, Ant was very unpolished, and, you know, he was going to be making a lot of mistakes, and he was going to have wild variance in his shooting performances, and you know, that necessitated a more inconsistent amount of minutes. So some nights he'd have it, some nights he wouldn't. But I think what you saw, you know, later in that rookie season is the good performance is starting to become a little more consistent. And you could just see him starting to figure it out as his rookie year went on.
Yeah, I think that's very true. One analogy you gave that I thought was awesome was musicians, some of them needing sheet music, and then others being able to play it by ear. And I think Ant obviously leans more towards that sheet music side where you need the notes, you need the... But I do think, and like just watching, for instance, like Shea in the finals, I think certainly now at his point of his career is more like the being able to play it by ear, just being able to know what notes you got to play. And I do think over the years, and this will continue likely, that Ant is kind of... I think to a certain extent, he'll always need the quote-unquote sheet music to a certain extent, but I think like the getting used to it and the getting the like being able to know the exact right play to make without needing like direction, I think is coming more and more through the years.
I think you're right. I think he's starting to grasp it and get it more. I think you saw some growth in the postseason with that, not just late game situations, but overall. It was an interesting postseason for him because he didn't have the big scoring spikes that we're used to seeing from him, you know, 35, 40 point games in the postseason. Even if the Wolves would lose games, he might still score 40 and play really well, like he did in that Denver series 2 years ago when they lost in the first round. So this was an interesting postseason from that vantage point. And maybe he erred sometimes, and people would probably say, so maybe he erred too much on the side of deferring or quote unquote making the right play and not hunting for his shot aggressively enough, especially in that game four against Oklahoma City. But I think when you view like this postseason, to your point about kind of the larger arc of his career, what he's learned about making the right plays, reading defenses, I think he's doing it at a much higher level now and knowing what's required of him. And I think that's only going to pay dividends down the road because now he's just gaining more and more institutional knowledge and having more of these experience to draw from as he gets older and starts reaching the physical peak of his career. He'll also just have a wealth of knowledge now and experience to draw from to match his growing physical abilities.
Yeah. And that was actually my point, like throughout this whole season, when it kind of became clear that this wasn't necessarily a championship level team. Maybe that was even a wrong assessment, but like even at the doldrums, whatever this season was, like I was just like, get Ant into the playoffs, get Ant into a position to win a playoff series or two. That's almost as important as winning whatever. Like, just get him. I think just after every playoff series, I think he gains like a new skill, he learns something. Even like the disasters that have been the last two West Finals, I just think he gets a new sheet of music that he gets to learn from. Going back to like his teammate stuff, I think one of the biggest things is the difference when Kat was here. The difference between him and Butler is just stands out so much. And what's interesting is I think those are two very similar people, Jimmy Butler and Anthony Edwards, in the sense of they both don't like guys that don't use their talent to their full extent. They're both like the Atlanta to Texas connection. I think they're similar in that way, but the way they deal with that, and specifically as it relates to Kat, is so incredibly different. Where, and the Jimmy stuff, I think, was always a lot more about money, even than, at least in perception, it was more about like the money and the status or in the role within the team than it was about Kat Wiggins, maybe specifically. Obviously, that was a big part of it too. But it's interesting to see how much love Ant had for Kat, both on the court, but like you mentioned, like they were hanging out. Ant had a key to Kat's house, basically. Those Jimmy and Kat were not hanging out at Kat's house. I just like that's such a good, and Jimmy's had plenty of success, made the finals a couple times with Miami, and maybe the Golden State series goes differently if Curry is healthy. But I just think that that's such a feather in Ant's cap that whatever you wanted to describe Kat as a player, frustrating maybe. Ant was able to like embrace the good parts of Kat and try to help cover over some of the rougher edges of Carl.
Well, that's just it. It was recognizing that, yes, you know, nobody's perfect. Kat's not perfect, you know, and even to a certain extent, you know, like his relationship with Rudy, it's the same way. It's like, yeah, these guys aren't perfect, but just because social media clowns them or whatever, you know, however you want to term it, or that Jimmy didn't get along with Kat, like, doesn't mean that I can't, right? And I can't embrace all the good. And there's a lot of good that Kat brings to the table as a player. And, you know, I think in the same token, Kat, you know, is a good dude. And when you have that, it's like, yeah, Ant's gonna be there to support you, right? Like, he doesn't sense that you're trying to get in his way or the team's way, whatever, right? So, you know, Ant has no problem getting along with people like that. And so you recognize the good that somebody can bring to the table, to the team, to the organization, and you try to help them as best you can and as best they can to get that out of them. And that, I think, was his relationship with Kat. And Kat, to his part, you know, he said that he always wanted to show Ant, like, you know, kind of what it's like, the different challenges of being like a max guy, a franchise level guy, you know, didn't try to stand in the way. And sometimes, you know, ego and stuff like that can get in the way. But I think, to both of their credits, when they were here, they made it work. They helped each other out in different ways. They offered each other help along the way. And it was a good relationship. And as Ant said, you know, when the, you know, trade went down, like, that was like, that's his brother, and he didn't really want to talk about the trade happening at the time and all that. So I think that, yeah, that stuff was very genuine. Their relationship was very genuine in that way.
Yeah.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The last chapter of the book is about the Team USA experience, winning gold out in Paris. And a lot of that is about Durant. And I think that's going to be a big topic here, the Kevin Durant part of it here locally. I have a few quotes from your book. I miss Ant every day. He said he'll learn to open champagne soon, which I believe wasn't about literally opening the champagne. I believe that Durant feels Ant is a championship quality player. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's what that mostly meant. And then it feels like he's part of his family. Well, so Durant and Ant obviously have a big admiration for each other. Childhood for Ant playing as KD and 2K. I can say Durant is a phenomenal 2K player to use. Here's what I'll say. Well, if you don't want to miss Ant every day and you want Ant more part of your family, one way that that could happen is Durant ending up in Minnesota. And obviously, I don't think any of us really know how that'll go. I think we can both assume that the Wolves front office is going to try to make that happen. I guess I would ask you, do you feel like that would be a good pairing if Durant did end up in Minnesota? And like, would that be a smart decision without knowing if it's possible or what the return would be?
Yeah. That's the $52 million question, or however much Kevin Durant is making in the final year of his contract. Right. Cause obviously no matter the cost, you're going to have to match that salary and figure out a way to get Kevin Durant here. I think, and I'm just going off the vibes from the end of the season and just the general tone around the organization and seeing the two teams that are in the finals right now, I think the Wolves' success in getting to the Western Conference Finals, the Thunder, the Pacers in the finals, three of the four teams that are left standing right now, is a testament to having depth on your team. And I think you have to think long and hard if you are the Wolves about sacrificing some of that depth for Kevin Durant. I think they have to think long and hard about it if the opportunity presents itself. I think, as you mentioned in the book, Kevin Durant speaks glowingly of Ant and how close they were and how much he loves Ant. So I don't think, you know, like if Minnesota trade is on the table, I don't think Kevin Durant is going to be like, don't send me to Minnesota. Right. I think he's going to want to come play with Ant. I think that much is evident. I just think from the Wolves end of things, who knows? And here's the other thing to maybe keep in mind. This is the last year of Durant's deal. He's a free agent after this season. And I believe he has said on the record, I don't know if it's on the record or if he has said, you know, or if it has been reported through anonymous sources that if he feels that he has a chance to win somewhere, you know, and he's a free agent, he will take less money, right? Or a significantly reduced salary, maybe in an effort to win. So if you're the Wolves and you kind of know that Kevin Durant has that relationship with Ant, maybe you just wait a year, right? Maybe you wait for him to become a free agent, and maybe he wants to sign in Minnesota, right? You know what I mean? Like yep. Maybe you don't have to give anything up, and maybe you can sign him for, you know, a low dollar amount, you know,
relatively
low dollar amount, and you can make that work, right? So maybe that's also an avenue of, maybe you punt on it a year and you get Kevin Durant down the road, but you don't have to give anything up or not much, however the deal would work out in a, you know, to get him as a free agent a year from now. So who knows? I don't have really too much insight intel on as to who's in the running, or who's most likely to get him. But I do think the Wolves would have to think long and hard about the depth and, you know, what that would mean long term for them and the team that they're able to surround Ant with 3, 4, 5 years down the road to make that move. And right now, the organization has signaled through the Cat trade, through re-signing Rudy at a lower rate than his player option, is like they are thinking long term here.
Yeah,
they have a long term vision for, you know, how competitive they want to be around Ant moving forward, and so. It all depends on the cost and what they'd have to give up, obviously. But I don't think they're going to undervalue what the depth of this team meant to its success this year.
Yeah. And like just kind of playing around with the trade machine and thinking about like what is the most simple Durant trade? It'd be something like if Randall opts in, it'd be like Randall, DiVincenzo, and excuse me, some sort of future capital, whether it's the Detroit pick or Dillingham. I think those Randall and DiVincenzo don't quite meet the money, so you'd either have to add some more money on top of that. But like you said,
yeah,
I don't see a trade that doesn't involve like basically DiVincenzo and one of the two, or maybe Nas and a signer, whatever, one of the three bigs. So it's got to be some sort of 2-for-1 in that, like you said, that dips into your depth. And what is the balancing act between that and adding a Hall of Famer to your team?
Correct. So that's exactly what they have to ask themselves. And what is the cost? Like, do you have to give up Naz Reid in that scenario? You know, is he the final piece that would make a deal like that work? I don't know. And are you willing to part with him? Are they going to insist on having Jaden McDaniels as a part of the deal?
Well, then it's done.
Right. Then you're probably like, okay, well, then the Wolves should definitely be out. But who knows? That's what I mean. Like, we don't know what the negotiations are. We don't know what's on the table, what's not. But I do think the Wolves are going to be very cautious in how they view that move vis-a-vis their depth.
Yep, I agree. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know, maybe, like you said, if Durant wants to come here, there's a level of, like, forcing his way here. But I think Phoenix is in such a tough spot overall that even if Kevin Durant makes some sort of power play, it's hard to see.
And he'll be he'll be a free agent after this year, so he'll have all the power in the world to determine, you know, where he wants to go after this next season too. So there is that.
Yeah, I guess Rudy would be the other player that could potentially go out there. And I know Phoenix wants the center, but he's probably has the least trade value of like the three Wolves bigs, especially if Randall opts in. I don't know. It's probably not worth. Well, we'll see what happens. I think the first dominoes will be at the end of the month when those player options are officially announced between Randall and Naz Reid.
That definitely, we'll know going into free agency kind of where those guys stand and where the organization stands along with them. And, the one thing that I always like, if they opt out, everybody do not panic, especially with Naz. Like, it is expected that he will opt out. We think he's going to opt out. He said as much at his end of season press conference that was the plan when I asked him about it. So if you see that Naz Reid is opting out of his contract, that doesn't mean like shortly thereafter you're going to hear news potentially that they've agreed to a deal with the Wolves again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's that's how this could play out. And I think the Wolves value, these guys very highly, Julius and Naz. And just because, so when you see that on social media and stuff like that, don't hop in the comments saying the Wolves are screwing this up. Like, some of the stuff is just procedural at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think there's like a 2-day basically negotiating window where Naz becomes extension eligible before the player option date comes. So yeah. I guess they could try to work out something there, but I guess we'll head back to the book and leave the offseason discussion for the end of the month.
A lot of moving parts. Yeah.
For sure. I guess one last question about the book. You mentioned in the introduction Ant's relationship with kind of the media and him being weary of, it's kind of like to a certain extent, like, the same thing with him not liking people being fake or taken advantage of or whatever. I think fairly unfairly he has that relationship with the media to a certain extent. And you talked about how him and his group were very willing to discuss with you, but ultimately weren't able to get a sit down with Ant himself. I guess, how do you see his relationship with the media has evolved throughout the years? And was there any frustration with him not sitting down with you? Or do you feel like, through like the interviews he's given over the years, you were able to put enough of Ant himself in the book?
Yeah, I think it was that. I did not expect him to sit down with me separately for this. When I undertook the project, I didn't even ask them first before saying yes. I said yes and then asked them to sit down with me later. So with Ant, I undertook this project anticipating him not to participate. What I was very appreciative of was that he didn't put a stop to like people close to him talking.
Yeah.
And that can happen in these situations and has happened with people that try to write biographies of other people. So I'm very thankful that he was encouraging of it when I initially told him about it last summer, and that he didn't stand in the way of me talking to some of the most important and closest people in his life, that everybody was on board with it. And I hope they enjoy the result. And, so I'm very thankful for that. As for his relationship with the media, I think it's up and down, hot and cold, whatever, what I always appreciate about Ant is that, when he has something to say and he's very candid, and I think we appreciate that about him. He says what's on his mind. He doesn't really hold back, especially this year as the team was going through struggles. He didn't try to shy away from it at times. He didn't try to just paper over it with a cliche. He would say, we stink right now. We can't talk to each other. We can't do this. We can't do that. He's very candid and open and honest with us when he does talk. And so I think, we're appreciative of that because we like that. We just like to be able to tell people honestly what's going on with the team, and Ant helps with that.
Yeah, it's probably better to get like the good quotes you get out of him, and sometimes he's not available necessarily after whatever when you want him to, but he very rarely, if ever, is speaking like coded language like I think a lot of guys do, so we certainly appreciate that. I guess before we close out, I'll get on my soapbox here and say that the only person that could write this type of book is someone that is around the team as much as you. Is around the team on how many road games? Did you, I know you missed the one in Toronto because of Taylor Swift.
Probably I'm probably there for like, of the 41 road games out of a regular season, I'm probably there for like 31 to 33.
Yeah.
Give or take. Yeah.
And then if the schedule wasn't so weird, you would have been at pretty much every home, same, similar to, it's more of the home games too. Yeah. I just think there's, I know for me going to just even a small handful of road games, I know I got a little bit of kick out of, there's one, I went to the Wizards game this year out in Washington, and there was a quote from that media availability, and I got a kick of, oh, I was there for that. Mm-hmm. But I'll say that this only happens, a book like this, if someone is able to be around the team, and in this case, be around Ant as much as you. So I just think, like, I'll say that's a very impressed. I was very impressed with this book. I enjoyed it very much. And also just like the importance of, as the media landscape, blah, 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 changes, like having at least like someone or as many people as possible traveling with the team during the regular season. Obviously when the playoffs come, more people hound the everything. But yeah, I just think that shows the importance of like being there day in and day out for even like the random moments that may not seem important.
Yeah, that's it. That's, you know, it's what do people want out of their sports coverage? You know, are you willing to pay for this sort of stuff so that organizations can fund reporters to go on the road? And, you know, it's tough in this day and age, and people have, you know, a finite amount of money to spend. You know, but that's what your subscriptions and stuff do for us, and allow us to give you that sort of access and ask those kind of questions on a long road trip that, you know, frankly, otherwise would not be asked if it was just the local reporters on the scene in a certain city. You know, they're not asking the same kind of questions that we would ask, or that, you know, the team or the fans want to know about the team. So, you know, I'm very fortunate the Star Tribune put me in this position, and, you know, and like you said, yeah, this book likely doesn't happen as well if I'm not on the road in some instances. And just being able to build that relationship with Ant and with the other guys on the team and Finch and the coaching staff, and, you know, just having those relationships that I'm always around, always accountable for what I write, what I say. And, you know, it's a good give and take in that way. And that's something, unfortunately, like you said, is, you know, it may go by the wayside here as the media landscape changes.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep stumping for
appreciate
for people
that
to be there as much as possible. I have an immense sway, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, but thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything, obviously we're plugging the book. Everyone, yep. Go buy it, go read it. If you're it's must read for any Wolves fan. Mm-hmm. And that comes off as cliche, but it just is true. It's like, if you're not going to read the book, like, you're going to be a step behind people when talking about this team, and certainly Ant himself. But
I like that. I'm going to steal that. You're going to be a step behind and talk about the team if you don't read the book. I like that. Yeah. I'm going to use that.
Please.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Is all yours. But yeah. Is there anything you want to plug here, Star Tribune wise or Wolves coverage wise?
Yeah, Star Tribune coverage. As far as ordering the book, various outlets, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, major outlets like that, but local bookstores in Minneapolis have them as well. So if you want to support your local independent bookstores, you know, they have them as well. I have an event coming at Majors and Quinn in Uptown on the 18th. I believe it's 7 p.m. that begins. And then I'll be at the Barnes and Noble in Uptown on the 28th. I believe I'll be there starting at 1 p.m. for people to get their books signed or come and buy one and then have it signed. You know, so happy to do that. If you would like a signed copy, I have a limited number that I can sell to you. So that's basically first come, first serve. Hit me up on Twitter or Blue Sky if you would like that.
Awesome. Yeah. Everyone should follow Chris, like the book. If you're not reading or following Chris, you're a step behind on just the regular Wolves coverage. Looking forward to next season with you. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks so much for doing this, Ryan. Appreciate it.
And thank you. Thanks for everyone for listening. Let's go Wolves.
Thank you.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.